Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and from my mother's womb, I was untimely ripped.
Which is apt, because today is Australian Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. But so apt. I'm so funny and smart and nice.
I'm Regan Lloyd, the Greek god of forgetting the plot.
Yay.
Remember last episode when I made that joke about being the Greek god of forgetting, of watching the wrong episode? And I was like, that's going to make sense next week. It probably still doesn't, because we've just started the episode. But soon you'll be like, ah.
Ah, yes, of course. I see what she was foreshadowing. Yes.
Yes.
And my thing was about Dionysus, who features heavily in this episode. The Greek god of wine and revelry.
What was that? What was that noise?
I just cracked open a beer.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
That was apt.
This is a Afterglose Raspberry Goz, or Goze, or I don't know how to say it, by Boston Brewing Co.
Is it like G-O-S-E?
Yeah.
I think it's Goz.
It's Goza, the Gozerian.
There's one that's like G-E-U-Z-E, and that's Goz. So I don't know if they're the same thing, but spelled different.
Hmm. Beer mysteries.
Yeah.
Hi, welcome to Beer Mysteries, where we don't solve, but ask a lot of interesting questions about beer and the things we don't know about it. One, alcoholic? Probably.
Depends.
Hmm.
A thing that I'm really enjoying at the moment is that England's finally catching on to the concept of a 3.5% beer. Instead of, like, everything being 6%.
Ah.
Which is a rough time.
People in America stereotype about British beer being very warm. Is that true?
Not in my experience, but I can understand. So when I was 17 in Australia...
You drank some very good beer.
Yes. No. My high school boyfriend, who had just moved over from England, his family would keep fizzy drinks in the cupboard instead of the fridge, and I was like, what the fresh fuck? But apparently in England you can do that because it's cold all the time. So maybe where the beer thing is from.
Could be. A nice room temperature beer, but room temperature is below freezing.
Exactly.
So what's new, Regan? It's been a while.
It has been a while. So since we last recorded, it has been my birthday.
Ooh.
Yep. I got an orb of a crystal.
Speak on that.
Let me check what it's called. It's very beautiful. I can see it from my recording position.
Because you know I loves me some orbs.
Couple of top-notch orbs is a sentence that the Sunday Times has just published.
Oh, no.
Friend of the show, Nicola Macri, made them.
What?
Have you not seen her interview in the Sunday Times magazine?
I don't remember anything about orbs.
Yeah, she did like a favourite things and some of them were orbs. And she said the sentence, couple of top-notch orbs.
Okay.
Okay, it is a septarian orb that absorbs negativity and transforms it into positivity. And it looks like a fucking dragon egg and it's real fucking cool.
Sick. Does it enhance your spell casting?
Don't know.
Cool. Okay.
I'm sure it would if I knew anything about spells.
So you've acquired some orbs. You've done some dungeons.
Do you know what else I got, though? Which is, so Fred was saying that my birthday present was going to be even better than my present last year, which was a Sonos speaker. And I was like, I doubt it, bitch. And he was like, no, you'll use it every day. And I was like, oh, I can't think of anything I would use every day that I want. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. And he was like, trust me, you'll love it. And I didn't, but I should have because he got me a soda stream.
Ooh, yeah. Now you can have all the pop you want.
Not even pop, just sparkly water.
Ah, sure. But you can like mix flavours into it though, can't you?
You can, but I have not bought any yet. But that's going to happen. So it was my birthday, which was very exciting because I got two presents. And then I went to Italy, which was also great. I had some very good pistachio gelato. My Italian.
I had some very good pistachios while I was there.
My Italian was good enough that I could be understood by people, which was very exciting.
Did you meet Pistachio Disguisi?
Speak on that.
Pistachio Disguisi is a protagonist of the 2002 film Master of Disguise.
Is that the one with the person who talks about being in a turtle club?
Yes.
Yep.
Fun fact about that scene, that film was the only film that didn't shut down in recognition of the fact that 9/11 happened on September 11, 2001, and that day they filmed that scene.
The Pistachio Disguisi one or the turtley one?
The whole movie is the Pistachio Disguisi one.
Oh, okay. Whoops. Sorry, I just monopolised that conversation talking about orbs and shit. What have you been doing?
Whole lot of nothing. I've been watching a lot of TV, been playing a video game that's been dead for 10 years and is now back.
What is it?
It's called City of Heroes. It's an MMORPG. I've talked about this at length on my other show, but the long and short of it is it's just a superhero game where you can create dumb characters. I've got a guy called Crystal Brawl, the orb that loves to punch.
Oh, so it's an orb-heavy episode.
Yeah. I thought I'd weave that in, seeing as.
Love it. Good.
Mayhaps orbs will feature heavily in the mystery we'll be discussing this week. They won't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I watched it like 3 weeks ago, so.
Tuca and Birdie dropped on Netflix. I've been watching that. It's really good.
Yes, I have seen it exists, but I have not watched it.
It's by the character designer and from BoJack Horseman, Lisa Hannawalt. Which is would recommend.
It's clear when you see the thumbnail.
Yeah. And I've been listening to Finding Drago, an investigative podcast.
Oh my god, can we talk about it? Because I finished it.
Yes.
I finished the entire thing in probably 36
hours. I don't
want to
give it away, though. I don't want to give it away.
No, but I just want to talk, like, in very general terms. I've been so evangelical about it. And also, the theme music's a fucking bop.
Fuck yeah. I also listened to it in about a day.
Oh. It's so good. I wish I had listened to it as it was released so I could join in on the speculative mystery.
Mm. So it concerns two Australian comedians, Alexei Toliopoulos. That doesn't sound right.
It sounds right to me.
Okay. Alexei Toliopoulos, or Lecky Tollypops, as they call him on bigsofttv.png.
Excuse me?
Demi Lardner and Tom Walker call him Lecky Tollypops.
On what now?
Oh, on their podcast, bigsofttitty.png. Surely we've talked about this.
We have not.
Okay, it's good. Check it out.
All right, I will.
And Cameron James, who you may know as one of the investigators in the lost episode of our podcast, where we watched a show featuring Cameron James and Becky Lucas.
Listen, I remember watching the show, I remember recording the episode, I remember being like, we can never release this, it's terrible. And that's it. But one of my friends, when I recommended their podcast, she looked it up and was like, oh my god, I love Cameron James. She used to work for Melbourne Comedy Festival, so that's a recommendation.
Great.
But please listen to all of Finding Drago and then message us for some discourse because...
Yeah, DM me, like, legit.
It's such a ride that I don't want to ruin the ride for anyone.
Premise. Alexei Toliopoulos really likes Rocky and Rocky IV and Ivan Drago. He found a spin-off book about Ivan Drago on Wikipedia. Can't find anything out about the author. Goes from there.
Yeah.
It has twists and turns you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. And also... Speaking of you watching a lot of TV, which you mentioned a while back.
Well, yes, I was going to say. And also, I caught up on Riverdale recently.
Caught up on Riverdale is now ahead of me in Riverdale because when I was in Italy, all I did was Italian things and watching The Sopranos, which is kind of also an Italian thing. Very loosely.
I don't think we'll be returning to our signature segment, What's the River Deal, this episode, but we may do in the next couple of episodes, just because Lewis is long. But I will say, I watched about 3 episodes in a row one day when I was homesick with a bit of a fever, and I wasn't really sure if the kung fu psi battle with two middle-aged women I was watching was real or a fever dream.
Oh, it was very real.
Yeah, but what?
Let me read you a snippet of mine and Liam's Facebook messages from yesterday. Okay, I was legit shocked that... Spoiler inserted here. Wait, did we talk about getting in fridges recently? No, that was on my bim bam. This was on me. And then Liam just said, what is happening?
You sent that to me. It must have been about like 3 a.m. my time. I just woke up to this whole thing.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I didn't think of the time difference.
So look forward to that.
Listen, I reckon next episode we'll talk about it because then the series will have finished.
Oh, yes. We'll carve out some time to do a half-sode on that because it's bonkers. Because if you recall, faithful listeners who definitely exist, I dropped off Riverdale about a quarter way through season two, and it's been a ride since then.
Yep. And I, meanwhile, have stuck with it. And I think aggressively explained the plot to Liam while we've been recording, so.
Yeah.
It's a good time. But let's... You know what else is a good time? Or not.
Lewis.
We'll find out at the end of the episode. It's Lewis.
Lewis. Episode 1/episode 2, depending on how you count the pilot. Remember that? I sure do.
I will never forget.
This episode is called Who the Gods Would Destroy, and it's about a secret society... Secret society loosely in four words, because it's just four dumb idiots.
Yes, yes, that's good. Yes, it's about university. And you know how when you're at uni, you just have some like wild, crazy times? It's just an episode about that. Just your standard university crazy times.
I feel like it is trying to be like, apparently, you know, like in those big colleges in the US, they have like the Skull and Bones Club and things like that. I feel like it's trying to be like that, but also it is just four guys.
I feel like Oxford probably does have quite a few groups of four people who are trying to be like,
we're the Illuminati now.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's introduce our players, then we can set the scene a bit more thoroughly.
Let's do it.
Crack open the Persons of Interest file.
Crack.
Great. Oh, I love the sound of the spine snapping when you crack it open. Kevin Whatley is D.I. Robert Lewis, a holdover from the previous show Morse, and he's assisted ably by Lawrence Fox as D.S. James Hathaway. I couldn't be bothered pulling credits on them, because we did it last time.
We did, and I don't remember any, so that, I mean, apart from the fucking show, what they were in before that this one's based on.
Episodically, we have Crispin Redman is Dean Greeley, our victim this week. He played Judge Rory Richards in Law and Order UK for about 6 episodes.
Oh my god, I didn't know there was a Law and Order UK.
Yeah, I've heard it gets pretty wild.
Well, that is going on the list.
I think it might actually already be on it.
I honestly don't think it is unless you've been updating your Excel sheet and not our shared document.
Oh, but there was that day that I added about 60 things to it, so. So there's three main suspecty people in this episode who are three of the four other members of this, these four guys in their secret society. Although I would argue that not one of them turns out to be the main villain. We'll get to that. But there's three of them, excluding the one who dies right at the start.
Yep.
Two of them are just two distinct flavors of insufferable, and one of them is just kind of there.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Richard Linton is Sefton Lynn. His first name Sefton, last name Lynn.
Old money.
So what is that? Is that an English name?
Fuck knows, mate.
Sefton. I kept looking back at my notes as I was doing the episode being like, oh, I misspelled Stephen there.
Nope.
Weird. He is in the running to be a potential chancellor at the university. Do all of the episodes of Lewis and Morse involve this university?
Well, I guess the show is set in Oxford, so it probably comes up a bit.
I guess. And he was also a member of the secret society back in the day.
But we don't know that yet.
No, but we're setting the scene.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Richard also played Tim Everett in The Bank Job. And he was the narrator on the documentary Nazi Mega Weapons for the episode V1, Hitler's Vengeance Missile.
Gracious.
which sounds like a sort of Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow style, like, the Nazis are back from the moon and they've got their vengeance missile.
Yeah.
But it was probably, in fact, very sad and upsetting.
Yeah, but it's just a weird title to give something, like, it just seems like a really clickbaity title for a TV show about Nazis, you know what I mean?
Nazis hate him.
My favourite clickbait thing is a meme about clickbait that's like a picture of Jesus and a fisherman or something in a boat. And they're like, cast the clickbait net, cast it wide. And then the other one's like, what will happen? And then the first one's like, what happens next will shock you.
My favourite e-Jesus thing is old people on Facebook posting like screeds or memes about Jesus, but it's a picture of Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, that is also very good.
Adrian Rawlins plays Harry Bundrick. He's the least insufferable of the secret society members.
Agreed.
He's just sort of like a sad pawn shop owner.
Just a sad porn user.
Yeah, sure. That's what that means.
Yeah.
He owns a place that people will come and pawn their items, you know, a sort of centralized node where they can all come and do that, a sort of porn hub.
I did not see that coming. Oh, that was very good.
He played James Potter in the Harry Potter films.
Did he?
Yeah.
Ah, didn't recognise him.
Neither. But I haven't watched those movies for a long time, same. And I never saw the last one.
I actually only saw up to the fourth one, so probably understandable.
Richard Delane is Theodore Platt. He's paraplegic, he's drunk, but not related. He's a writer.
Well, they are related because he's paraplegic because he was involved in an accident when he was drink driving.
No, you are right. I was awkwardly trying to express that you know, when people was talking about getting super drunk, they said, like, oh, he was paraplegic.
Do they?
I've heard that.
Oh. I mean,
It's probably not on in these days.
No,
but I've heard
no,
it.
Yes.
He's just the worst. He's just like
fucking horrible.
It's testament to the writing of this show. He's very fun whenever he's on screen. I'll give him that, because he's just so aggressively awful. But they managed to rob you of any sympathy you might have for a man who's been in a horrible car accident.
Yeah.
He played acting commissioner in The Dark Knight.
Acting because Commissioner Jim Gordon wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it's indisposed or shot or something.
I was honestly just impressed that I knew Commissioner Jim Gordon was a person.
Good work.
Thank you.
As played by either Gary Oldman or Gary Newman.
You're cracking out the good jokes today, mate.
Not a joke. Can't remember which is which.
I'm pretty sure it's Gary Oldman. Because okay. He's old, but maybe I've just made that up.
Anna Madeley plays Anne Sadikov, who is the aforementioned Mr. Platt, the insufferable paraplegic's wife.
Yep.
She was his nurse and then became his wife after he proposed.
And then
She played...
Oh, no, I was just going to say he spends a lot of the episode being like, she only married me for my money.
Yeah.
Asshole.
She played Denise in Bruges.
Oh, I've seen that.
And Yeah. Who's Denise?
Can't remember, but I remember enjoying the movie against all odds.
Why against all odds?
I didn't think I would. And then I did. Oh, okay. And I was like, ah.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, no, I would. I mean,
but as we know, I don't watch
movies. Yeah, I know. And it's been about 10 years since I watched it because that was, you know, back in the day when I was at uni and had time to watch movies. So I don't know if it holds up.
She also played Anya in Utopia, that TV series from a couple of years back.
I thought Utopia was the reality series that got cancelled because...
There's been a lot of things named Utopia. There's also an Australian sitcom.
An Australian sitcom?
Yeah, by the people who did The Hollow Men.
God, The Hollow Men's good. interesting. Okay.
And finally, Anna Massey is Professor Margaret Gold, who is the Oxford professor who kind of, like, at first ruled over this little secret society, then they went rogue.
But she's the only one that can pull them all back together to solve the mystery. She's the real hero.
I got the impression she was an Inspector Morse alumni from a previous episode of that, but I checked and it doesn't appear to be the case.
I sort of just assume everyone's been in it before.
Small town, you know?
Yeah, you know how it is.
And yet, no two people will ever appear in two different episodes of Midsummer Murders.
Unless they're playing different characters, my favourite game.
Oh, yes, of course. Anna also played Miss Prism in the 2002 Importance of Being Earnest and just has been in a lot of, like, one-ep murder shows.
Interesting. That's an interesting career.
We've also got... I'll also point out, in our episodic cast this week, we have two Richards and two Annas playing significant roles. I'm sure that wouldn't have gotten confusing on set.
Absolutely not.
You want to just do it? Smash it out?
Absolutely. I mean, we're 25 minutes in and we've not even started talking about this hour and a half episode. First note, Lewis, why do we always pick shit without checking the timestamp?
Because, of course, you hadn't watched the previous episode at the time.
No, because, of course, I took it on good faith that episode one was the first episode.
Strange Silly assumption. Me. Don't know why you'd think one would be the first number.
I know. It was incorrect.
Wow, we open with a lot of just music and people walking through big old stone buildings. There's a sermon or something happening, and I briefly experimented with putting YouTube closed captions on so I could watch at a faster rate, but I stopped when this happened because the closed captions interpreted some Latin that was happening as... Benedict on the bees, ahem. At least Tony's quiet.
Oh, that's a good one.
Lots of people going down sinister stairs into darkened alleys, blah, blah, blah. The man we soon know to be Sefton Lynn goes into his office and he gets a voicemail from a journalist who goes by the name Fury.
Yes.
And she's like, hello, I've been talking to a son of the Twiceborn. If you want to know what he has to say about your little group, give me a call. Ooh, spooky.
Spooky.
Meanwhile, there's a lot of upbeat rock music as a sort of middle-aged woman is leaving a train station. There's a lot of people walking and smiling. We see, basically... With the benefit of hindsight, I realise we see what were just like all of the members of the secret society, which is the Sons of the Twiceborn, going about their day-to-day lives and like crossing paths and ignoring each other.
Do we?
I think so.
Okay.
We at least see Bundrick and Lynn cross paths.
Right.
We also see Platt, the, I don't want to talk about him as the paraplegic one, but it is...
You could call him the asshole.
Yep.
Because that's also a great character descriptor.
Yeah. We see him. We don't know he's paraplegic at the time, to be fair. We just see that he's a guy. He's trying to write. He's written chapter one. Frederick Bloom hated childhood. And then he's like, well, better do some cocaine and stare wistfully across the way at that cottage.
Yeah, he does love cocaine, doesn't he?
Basically, every scene he's in, someone will say something to him that will make him unhappy, and instead of responding, he will just uncork a bottle of wine, pour a bottle, and then wheelchair out of the room.
I thought you were going to say just uncork a bottle of cocaine.
Ah, just a nice, crisp bottle of cocaine. Glug, glug.
Let me just get my cocaine out of the cocaine fridge where I
keep it. Just decant my cocaine and let it aerate properly.
Yes, I'll be back with you in 30 to 45 minutes.
Once it's cooked. It's nighttime now. There's an artist. He's in what I thought was a van, but is a boat, looking at his paintings and drinking. He hears a noise outside. He goes outside. He thinks it's kids, but it's not. He gets murdered.
Welcome to the victim.
Yeah, that flashes up on screen. It's a clap. You go.
Oh, I was just going to say that wouldn't it be great if murder mystery shows had Always Sunny style title cards?
Who's those kids over there? Oh, it's you. It wasn't him.
Or just, what's the victim's name?
Greeley.
Greeley. So it's just like Greeley looking at his paintings and being like, oh God, stupid kids outside.
It's just Greeley looking at his paintings being like, I'm going to live forever.
Yeah. <Du-du-du>. Greeley gets murdered.
I think I was doing... What music was I doing?
Were you doing Curb?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I do want to point out, this was a classic safe for TV murder, because he walked out into the woods adjacent to where his boat was parked. We saw the camera, shaky cam, walk towards him. Then we cut to black and we heard like bath pow noises.
Yeah, it was a very BBC murder.
Yeah. It's you. As seen unironically in Midsummer Murders episode 1, but I'll give it a lot of credit.
Absolutely.
Lewis is in his house. He's thinking of applying to university. He goes through this episode. He can't make up his mind about what course to apply for. Then he decides not to. What a great B-plot.
Yeah, that confused me a lot. Because I was like, but you're a detective.
Well, you know, obviously his wife has just died, maybe he's trying to, get away from the murder beat, even after he fought so hard to stay on it last episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he's thinking he wants to have a new lease on life.
I mean, I am new all Lewis for on life. I'm all for continued education, but it just seemed a bit incongruous with his character.
And also just a bit half-assed as a big plot.
I would say more than a bit half-assed.
Quarter-assed.
Yeah.
And then he and Hathaway go to the crime scene.
Because there's been a murder.
Yeah, we saw it, but not all of it, and not the important bits.
And they didn't see it because that would ruin the show.
Yep. The coroner, whose name I don't think we got in either of these episodes, informs us that the man we know to be Daniel Greeley died between 10 and 12 p.m. last night, and that he was bludgeoned to death.
Yup.
They find on his kit a contact book, a wallet containing a pawn ticket, and a rail ticket returned from London.
Well, that's not really getting us anywhere.
There's also a brief thing that his watch is missing because he had a tan line, but there's no watch. And this concerns his long-term life partner, who I don't really think impacts the episode at all.
No, I completely forgot she was in it until I was doing my recap.
So basically just they think she's a suspect for a while, they take her to the station, she took his wallet and his watch, and I guess that was cool? Because she seemed to think it would be fine, but then the silly bugger called the police as if he had been robbed. Certainly he hasn't just been robbed by me when I took this watch and wallet out of his boat.
Yeah, really weird.
Hmm. She pops up about, again, probably about the 80% mark of the episode, but I don't really think she contributes much.
I completely forgot she even popped up again.
So let's excise her.
Yep.
I do want to point out that she points out that
he came to Oxford at the behest of an old friend.
That, and also that he doesn't live in Oxford, he lives in Bayswater, which shares the name with a suburb that's very close to where I live.
Yeah! So many of those in London.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which, and it's weird. I hate it when there are suburbs that are next to each other in London that are really far apart in Perth, because it just confuses. I'm like, no, they're not the same.
Just skimming through my notes to get through all of the estranged partner stuff. She thinks he's having an affair. He wasn't. Blah, blah, blah. Hathaway and Lewis check in at the pub, and they look through Greeley's contact book and find some stuff written in ancient Greek, which Hathaway knows a bit of.
Hathaway is such a Renaissance man.
He knows Greek, he can row.
He knows about nuns.
Religion. Yep. Yeah, nuns. Crosswords.
Yeah, he knows about crosswords. Mm-hmm. Do we learn anything else this episode?
No. Came in strong with the Hathaway, then he kind of faded into the background a bit. So, yes, this Greek sentence says, Sons of the Twice-Born, which is, as I've already revealed, the name of their little secret group, and it's a reference to Dionysus, the Greek god of wine and revelry, who, like, had some complicating circumstances in his birth, so Zeus sewed him into his thigh, and then he was later born from that, hence Twice-Born.
Oh. That's weird to just...
Not to be confused with Athena, of course, who sprung fully formed from a wound on Zeus's head.
Fuck me, Greek mythology's just bonkers.
Yep, that's the long and short of it.
I love it, but, like, crazy.
And then there's just some random characters he can't decipher, but Lewis is like, I know someone who might be able to. And then they're walking through a big Ghostbusters library and they get to this woman, Professor Gold, who I thought was an old Morse character, but apparently isn't.
They're in the Bodleian, I think, which is a very famous library.
Oh, okay. I was like,
because
what
my
are you
notes
saying?
Say the Bodleian is a famous library. Because I recognize the name.
They talk to her briefly. She explains that the characters they can't figure out are transcribed telephone numbers. Oh, telephone numbers. Great. And then they leave and she looks at a newspaper in the most suspicious way.
Oh, 100%.
She does maybe one other remotely suspicious thing in this episode, but just the way she looks at this newspaper had her on my radar so hard. So there's a brief... There's a sequence where they go and call in at the other three members of the Sons of Dionysus. Mr. Lynn, the Chancellor, Mr.
Pratt?
Bandrick.
Platt? No.
Yep, Mr. Platt, the asshole, and Mr. Baldrick, the Pornhub owner.
Yes.
There's a brief subplot earlier in the episode that Lewis is, like, really predisposed to hate Pratt because... Oh, sorry, Platt. They make a joke about that on the episode. Because he is paraplegic because of an accident where he was driving under the influence and he got off without any punishment because he had really good lawyers because he's super rich. And the person that he had a crash with died. And obviously Lewis has a lot of baggage with his dead hit-and-run wife.
Yes. Which also comes up later in the episode.
But then, of course, Mr. Platt wins him over with his colourful personality.
So this is also where we meet Anna for the first time?
Yeah, she's his much nicer wife, who Lewis just seems to want to talk to a lot for the rest of the episode.
Lewis does tend, unless I'm just thinking of this episode instead of both episodes, but it just seems like he does pick one person and he's like, yeah, we're best friends now. Let me tell you. I'm going to go further than that
and say two for two this episode. He's picked one woman and been like, yes, you're very nice.
And trustworthy. Let me discuss the case with you.
Mm. So let's just move swiftly along. They check in with all three of these guys and they ask them all, like, you ever heard of the Sons of the Twiceborn? And they're all like, nope. But then when they get to the last one, Mr. Lin, the Chancellor in Prospect, they go like, oh yeah, the other two told us about the Sons of the Twiceborn. How's that? What's that about?
A clever ruse.
And he does just brush it off, be like, oh, just a group of old friends. But then they've got him, because they know it exists. And they've all got Dionysus signet rings on their fingers.
There's just so much about this episode that's like, just rich idiots, you know? Like having a signet ring because your group of university friends were like, oh, let's all get matching signet rings.
Like gold ones too, because that was the ring that Greeley kept hawking at the pawn shop.
Ah. Yep.
But no, you're right, just rich idiots. I mean, like, yes, let's get incredibly valuable just pieces of vanity to our idiot school chums that we all hate now anyway, but we keep wearing.
Liam.
Yeah?
Can we get matching signet rings?
Sure, yeah.
They'll just have a question mark on them.
Or a magnifying glass.
That's much better. Oh my god, can they like double up as magnifying glasses? Like you take the ring off and then you magnify shit?
Or a Dakota ring?
Yeah!
Let's just get matching Dakota rings from cereal boxes.
Yes, perfect. Also much cheaper.
That's on brand for us, having no money.
Oh, absolutely. So they know the Sons of the Twiceborn exist. They know they've all got these little matching rings. But how are they going to find out more?
There was a thing here. Yes, as they're leaving Mr. Lin's house, his daughter or his wife's daughter or something, Megan comes by. And they notice a bunch of leaking oil by Mr. Lin's car. And she's like, oh, I know about that. And she talks to them for a bit. And she goes inside and he gets really angry at her. And then it never comes up again.
Well, the leaking oil, there was an oil leak at the scene of the murder.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, so that's why that's significant.
Ah. And then that character never comes back either.
No.
What happens next? Oh, yes, the best scene happens.
I don't remember what the best scene is.
Okay. Lewis's boss, Innocent, is angry at him that he's harassing such a prominent person as Mr. Lin. So she's going to send him on her behalf to her ladies group chamber music performance, which he's going to hate. But also he's going to hate that he has to make nice to Mr. Lin there.
Right, yes.
Prior to, at the garden party beforehand, they chat about the case. And Lin is genuinely shocked that Lewis mentions that the autopsy disprove something Lin had said earlier about Greeley having a terminal illness, because he genuinely believed that. And then the rest of the evening, Lin just gets more and more upset. And there's a great sequence where they're in the orchestra, in the performance, and Lewis and Lin are sat across from each other. And there's just all these shots like between them, the close-ups on their faces. Lewis is just unblinkingly staring at Lin hatefully, and Lin is getting more and more upset.
I do not remember this scene.
Lin runs out of the auditorium, Lewis pursues him, but he gets away.
Seems very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. A secret meeting happens. Lin goes downstairs and meets with Harry in a dark storeroom, and they're just talking and they're making small talk. And then Platt just like zooms in on his chair being like, what's up, motherfuckers?
Yes, I do remember that scene.
he can move at speed on this thing.
He can. And he does.
He says, quote, you missing those wild bacchanalian nights in my temple? He's got a way with words. You got to give him that.
He does. He must have been such a fun character to write.
Yeah. Ironic that he's got such a way with words, considering that his whole thing is that he wants to be a writer but admits he sucks at it.
Yeah.
And that's why he felt a kinship with the dead Greeley, because Greeley was a painter and also sucked at it, but didn't really have the couldn't really admit it.
Yeah. I would say also a touch of the Thomas Noy.
Finding Drago, available now on all good podcast services.
Right, what's happening?
They're having this secret meeting. Professor Gold rocks up and is like, I've summoned you here to this secret Oxford basement to be like, someone's asking questions about the Sons of Dionysus and you guys might want to get your shit in order. Hathaway's eavesdropping. She's like, all right, bye. And then nothing really comes of it.
Is it Dionysus or Dionysus?
I don't know.
I also don't know.
I think it's Dionysus.
I could not tell you. Don't at us.
Lewis goes to see Anne, Mr. Platt's partner, Anne Sadikov.
His BFF this ep.
Yeah, she's making dolls in the temple on his property.
She's what now?
You know, just normal things.
Oh, yeah, she's making the temple like China on his dolls, property. Isn't she?
Yeah, making dolls.
Yeah.
We get her family backstory. Her dad was Russian, hence the name. He died a few months ago. He had been laid low by a stroke for some time before that, though.
Yes.
And she's explaining that she started working for Mr. Platt after his accident. And then about a year after that, he proposed. And then he rolls on into the room as he's wont to do, being like, yes, and she only married me for my money. And she's just staying the course because if I go before her, she gets a fortune. But if she divorces me, she gets nothing. It's a fun experiment we do, you see, where I try to be as insufferable as I can and she sees if she can stick it out for huge financial gains.
He's just such an asshole.
Yeah.
I hate him so much.
Lewis says like one thing to him and then he yells at them to get out of his house and they do.
Interesting. It seems like someone's hiding something.
Mm-hmm. Brief scene where Harry Bundrick and Ingrid, Dean's ex-partner or long-term partner, burn his paintings. Never goes anywhere.
I mean, if they were shit, then might as well.
Yeah, it's kinda this way.
Exactly. You don't want to embarrass his memory by having evaluator come in.
Mm-hmm. Lewis goes and sees Professor Gold and she exposits about the Sons of Dionysus.
Yes. What does she expose?
They were three classic students under her, and she has close relations with all of her former students, apparently, except for Mr. Bundrick, who was in medicine, but he had a crush on Mr. Lin. They first came to her in formal after-school discussion groups, but then involved in their own thing beyond that, and they had a big falling out, and then Mr. Bundrick attempted suicide.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Slit his wrists in town. Oh, we haven't mentioned that Mr. Bundrick lives with his mum in the pawn shop.
Yes. I thought of it and then I didn't say it.
Mm-hmm. That's it doesn't really come up much except for one great scene later.
Yeah.
Lewis goes home and he gets a note in his mail that says his friends killed him. Oh, sorry. His best friends killed him because of a boast.
Hmm. Okay. That's an intriguing clue.
Meanwhile, Mr. Bundrick gets a call from the journalist Fury, who says, I see you got my message. Now there's something I want you to do for me. And he shouts, I won't, and his mum hears.
What's gonna happen?
Dunno, Mr. Lin's gone missing. His wife thinks that, like, he just came home after she went to bed and got up and went walking before she got up. Because he does his best thinking when he's out walking, but he's gone missing legit.
Shit, son.
Some stuff happens. Basically, he's dead.
Is he? Fuck. I'd forgotten about that.
He got shot in the chest by a double-barreled shotgun. Jesus. Meanwhile, Mr. Platt... Lewis goes to see Platt just as he happens to start choking to death. And his wife, Anne, who is, of course, his former nurse, performs an emergency tracheotomy on him to save his life.
Oh my god, yeah.
That's upsetting. When she like jams the pen into his throat.
Yep, she does.
He's in the hospital, and I wrote this note, this near-death experience brings them together.
Mm-hmm. He realizes that she truly does love him. She's not just with him for the money.
Ah.
That's nice. They share a moment.
It's nice that that's sincere and definitely what's happening.
Absolutely.
They talk about the Furies, because Fury is this journalist who's harassing all of the sons of Dionysus.
Yes.
The Furies were the agents of the gods who would harass, punish, and injure their prey but never kill them. Meanwhile, Platt gets a call from Fury being like, I'm watching your wife in the garden right now. How can you protect her in your condition? Uh-oh. Mr. Lin was so clever, but I could manipulate him so easily. Look how dangerous I am. Also, he's dead. He got shot.
I did it. I'm the murderer.
But this doesn't make sense, though, because she's saying... Oh, no, hang on. This is just my notes being dumb.
Okay.
Because what we learn later is that after this call, Platt goes and kills Lin.
What?
Platt. He goes and kills Lin with his shotgun.
But did... So the caller doesn't tell Platt that Lin's dead?
No, that was my mistake.
Right, okay. This episode was really long and confusing.
Yeah. But we're almost there.
We are almost there.
So Lin's been dead. He got shot by 2 shotgun blasts in the center of the chest and he didn't see it coming. They go and tell Bundrick about it, and the best scene happens. Bundrick gets really upset because he had a crush on Lin back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And they show him these letters that his mother had been sending to the college council criticizing Lin. And he's about to fess up to a dark backstory where he's like, I was going to be a surgeon, but then I couldn't carry on and Mum blamed the others for leading me astray. But it wasn't Sefton Lin's fault. It was something darker. And Lewis is like, tell me, Inspector Lewis, what it was, so I can solve the murders. And he's like, well, you see. And then his mum comes in.
And is just like, nope.
And he's like, you never should have said those mean things about Sefton. And she's all, I'm glad I did. And he's dead. And she's all, good.
Yeah.
Then she says to Lewis, when you find the person who did it, thank them for me.
Oh, she is a stone cold bitch.
Also, maybe a homophobe.
Well, no, because if she was a homophobe, she wouldn't, like, still love her son, right?
Potentially.
I think she just hates them for driving her son to attempt suicide.
Right, okay. So they find Lin's body. They found, like, he was, like, in a cottage. And they found a key on his body that led to this door, which was... Oh, sorry. Yeah, they found his body in the woods and the key led to this cottage, which was a sort of like, but basically an Airbnb under the name of Patricia Worth, who in 1984 had gone missing and there was a missing persons report by close friend Tina Daniels, who were both sex workers.
Right. What a twist.
Yeah.
So let's find Tina, I guess.
Well, Lewis immediately does the sensible thing and calls his BFF this episode, Miss Sadikov, and is like, you ever heard of the names Tina or Patricia Daniels? And, Tina Daniels or Patricia Worth? And she's like, nope, I'll ask Platt. Have you ever heard of those names? And then he pours himself a drink and rolls out of the room.
just, you know, classic Platt.
Mm-hmm. Platt. They do some staking out.
Nah.
Tina works on a sex line from 5 p.m. start a shift with a break from 8 to 9, which that would match up with the period where she wanted Lin to call her in response to her blackmail-y voice message at the end of the episode, at the start of the episode, if she was Fury.
Ooh, that's true.
Ooh. Meanwhile, Fury calls Platt and is like, ooh, you're in that big, dark, empty house. I'll be in touch with instructions because I've kidnapped your wife. And then he opens the door after, like, yelling a lot, and there's a doll's head, like, hung.
Truly terrifying.
Lewis and Hathaway are staking out the sex call center until 5 when Tina arrives. And who's Tina?
Just a person.
Tina is someone we've seen in about 2 scenes of this episode. Mr. Platt's cleaning lady.
I don't remember that.
All right.
You must be making it up.
Yep. I made up this whole episode. I'm Lewis.
Do you think we could write a crime show?
With enough time, I reckon so.
I feel like we would try to make it too clever.
No, I think I would do it pretty on point.
Yeah, fair enough.
I love all those dumb tropes. Someone would definitely get, say, oh, it's you, then get bludgeoned by a candlestick.
Yeah. Wait. Have we missed the scene where Hathaway has phone sex?
No, that's just about to happen.
Okay.
Hathaway's about to have phone sex. Because they think that Tina, Mr. Platt's cleaner, might be Fury. So there's a fun bit where he's very nervously, like, Superintendent Innocent is there, and he's very nervously like, Mom, would you mind? This is meant to be phone sex.
Also, Superintendent Innocent is such a name
for
a police.
She's got to be a Morse character, right?
Must be.
Yeah. So they're doing, Hathaway has to do the phone sex, and he's lying and pretending to he's been dumped and such while they're doing the voice matching stuff.
Yes. Pulling the audio waves on top of each other.
Yeah, like what definitely works.
Absolutely.
So he gets her talking and, like, doing the phone sex thing, and then when they get the match, they signal to him and he says, Tina, I have to go, my mum's coming.
Which is I love very this good.
Cut to her in custody. She's not talking. But Lewis basically exposits that she compelled Lynn to kill Greeley, the first murderer of the episode, and then he was getting really guilty and the police were closing in, so she convinced him to go hide in the cottage. And then she coaxed him out of the hiding to get murdered.
But none of this explains why he was in a cottage under the name Patricia Walsh.
Close enough.
Waters. Worth thing. I don't know.
Patricia Worth, yeah. They get a warrant. They search her place. The thing of note they find is a pad that's had writing on it, but not on the page. They don't do the cool thing where they rub a pencil over it. They just hold it into the light. And they see that it says adrenochrome, which is a drug. And Hathaway, who knows a lot about special drugs apparently, tells us that you have to murder someone to get this drug in its purest form, essentially.
Because it's from the adrenal gland.
Yeah. And we figure out that... Oh, we kind of skipped over the whole thing with the Sons of Dionysus, which was that they wanted to be cool and creative and wanted to do, like, a heap of shit drugs to do it.
Right, yes.
Which is why at the start of the episode, Mr. Pratt was doing a... Platt, that keeps happening. Cocaine for his writing. That's like a holdover from that.
Right, yes. Yes.
So they wanted to do some adrenochrome, but to get the purest form, you need to harvest it from someone's adrenal gland, which would kill them.
So they
got Mr. Bundrick, the pawn shop owner, to ask Tina if she could recommend a girl for one of their parties. And she sent Patsy, who is the one with the missing persons report and who the cottage's name was under. Bundrick said she never arrived, but she had arrived, and they murdered her and took her adrenal gland and turned it into adrenochrome. About a year... You go.
Oh, Bundrick couldn't live with the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the suicide attempt.
Yep, so he told... Basically, he called her up one night, drove her home from work. Tina, this is. Told her the whole story, then immediately slit his wrists in the car.
Which is horrifying.
Yep. So they started putting this plan into motion. They told Greeley that an old chum was about to spill the beans about it, which is what lured him to Oxford to get murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Fury persona, which Tina adopted, intimated that Greeley had been talking to her about the whole thing to get Lynn to kill him if he wanted to be Vice Chancellor.
Oh, this is all very tricky. Wait,
Tangled
but
web.
Did Bundrick
Tangled
have anything
web.
To do with everyone else's murders?
No, they tried to compel him to kill Lynn, but he refused. So they got
So he wasn't involved. He didn't come up with the plan with Tina.
No, he didn't kill anyone other than being complicit in the initial murder all those years ago, which he is arrested for at the end of the episode. So what we learn is that when they wanted to go do the big night and do their drug, murder, sex, death thing.
Yep.
Lynn, like, got the willies and ran away and wasn't involved. But Bundrick and Greeley were there but couldn't kill the person who had passed out from partying. But Platt did it.
Of course he did.
And then they all hid the body on his estate. Bundrick was already getting super guilty and he threw his signet ring into the grave. And then the rest was history. But secret final hour twist. You know who else was in on it? Platt's wife, Anne, because she was the daughter of the dead woman, Patricia.
Honestly, like 11th hour twist of the century.
Nuts. So, Tina adopted Anne, Patricia's daughter, after Patricia went missing, then married Roman, the man she referred to as her dad earlier. And they raised her together.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. And their whole plan is that Platt is the one they wanted to leave alive because he's the only one who knows precisely where she was buried.
Right, yes.
Because Bundrick won't play their game and Greeley is dead.
Yes.
So, after Anne was quote-unquote kidnapped earlier, we've had a few cutaways to Platt just, like, rattling around his house being like, Ring me.
Signet ring him?
So the phone rings and it's The phone rings and it's Anne giving a real teary voice and she's like, there's a woman who has me here and she says, give me the directions and she'll let me go. So he's like, okay, I'm going to give you the directions. There's a statue of Dionysus.
Oh, of course there fucking is.
Yep, basically. Way to be subtle. We cut through the rest of the directions, then Anne comes back, and it looks like she walks through a full-length window or something.
I don't remember.
It's like an open doorway to the outside, but there's no door there. It's just, like, draping curtains, and she's standing backlit by the sun, and she's like, I'm here to murder you now.
I honestly don't remember. I was losing it by the end of the episode, to be fair.
I got some quotes. She says,
great.
You murdered my mother, Theodore, and your chums did nothing to stop you. And he says, rubbish. She was just some whore. That's not possible. And she says, it is. And he says, but I killed Lynn for you. She said if I didn't kill him, then you would be harmed. And she says, yes, we intended it for it to be Bundrick, but he refused. Cut to Lewis being like, oh, I got this riddle earlier about how his best friends killed him because of a boast. Cut to the dogs that had been precisely one shot earlier in this episode. The Pratts own two big aggressive dogs.
Yep.
She says, when you said you loved me, I knew you would step up to the plate and murder people.
Jesus Christ.
He starts shouting, you bitch, I'll stick you, you bitch, and, like, grabs some scissors off the table. He starts rolling towards her, and she says, oh dear, I think they heard you, Theodore, and then dogs run into the room and tear him to shreds.
Yep.
So this is what I understand now.
Go on, because I think it's going to be the same thing I don't understand.
Yeah. So Bundrick is arrested in a very brief scene. He's like, I'm glad it's over, and they're all, it could have been over a long time ago if you said anything. And he's all like, oh well.
Lol, soz.
Then they're walking on the estate with Tina and Anne and Lewis. And he's all like, well, what are you guys going to do now?
Yeah, so he doesn't... There is a scene with him and Hathaway, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so well, first they dig up her mum's body and they find it. And it, oh no, someone swapped out her body with a skeleton. She denies sending that note to Lewis about the dogs or best friends murdering, because that would mean it was premeditated murder that she was culpable for. Very, very transparent lie, if you ask me.
100%, yes.
And then there's a bit with Lewis and Hathaway where he says, if she did send you that riddle, she's guilty of premeditated murder. Doesn't that make her just like Platt? And he says, not in my book. And like, what the fuck?
Well, because Platt was
a prat?
No, because of his involvement in the like hit and run drunk driving accident. Mm. And Lewis's grieving over his wife. He thinks Platt's more guilty because he, you know, because of that.
Mm.
It's basically him exercising, like, some vengeance for his wife's death by just... But it's still fucked.
Do Anne and Tina go to prison?
No, that's the thing. They don't.
Because they get to orchestrate several murders.
Yeah, but they don't go to prison for it.
And they get all of Mr. Platt's money.
Yep.
All's well that ends well.
They all lived happily ever after.
Did the bad guys win in this one?
Kind of.
It's kind of fucked up.
But then, like, the other bad guys who did kill someone to drink their adrenal glands.
I mean, they're all bad guys.
Yeah. But the episode-specific bad guys. Lewis,
the good guy, seems to let some of the bad guys win.
He does.
I don't know if that sits well with me.
It's a weird episode. No.
So do you want to crack open our mystery envelopes?
I can't find mine because I appear to have...
Oh, because you wrote it low those many months ago.
Yeah, I appear to have ripped that page out of my notebook.
No one can ever know what I thought. No one can ever know that I thought that Lewis did it.
I mean, it's fair to say I'm not going to be like, I guessed the whole thing because... We've all listened to me give mystery envelope before. I was nowhere near. I was just trying to figure out if it was like Lynn or whatever. There is no way that I guessed there was a previous murder that everyone was atoning for.
See, I wrote mine after I found out about that.
Okay, go on.
I wrote this at 1:07:10 when... When Lewis has just called Miss Anne Sadikov and she asked Platt, did you know about these sex workers?
Okay.
And I wrote...
You asked that so convincingly, I thought you were asking me if I knew about the sex workers. And I was like, Leon, we've just done a whole episode recap.
Go on. Fury is Professor Gold. She's tormenting the Suns because they did something terrible to Patricia Wirth that caused them all to go astray. Some kind of drug, sex, art murder. Separately from that, Tina Daniels is killing them in revenge. So not 100% right, but most of the core elements were there.
Why are you so much better than me at mystery envelopes? It's so bad for my self-esteem.
Maybe you're writing them too early.
I think I am. Jesus Christ. This is upsetting. Although I did pick up that thing in Finding Drago that not even the hosts have picked up.
If only you could talk about it.
I know. It's killing me.
All right. So, Regan.
Yep.
Lewis.
Yep.
Hot lead or cold case? I have a suggestion.
Please.
I want to watch Miss Fisher's Modern Mysteries.
Okay.
Great.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to sit through another fucking hour and a half epic.
Well, I think those are always also an hour and a half.
Yeah, but I'd prefer to sit through an hour and a half of Miss Fisher.
Yeah, the new Miss Fisher.
Yeah.
Great. All right, let's do that next time.
Easy. Sorry, we'll crime computer. You've been usurped by the human brain.
The most powerful computer of them all, except for, like, those chess-playing supercomputers or whatever. I'm sure we'll come back to Lewis at some point, though. I like this show.
I don't dislike it, but we just need to do it when there's, like, a public... We need to do it over Christmas or something. Yeah. We both have time.
Fair enough.
Cool. So, once you've listened to Finding Drago, you can email us at mtdapod@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at mtdapod. Our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. And until next time, no yachts.
Hustle always wins.